might say to the children, there's a story of a man in these verses, and you might just draw a picture of him at the end. As God works in his life and changes him, as Christ does that, what he is like at the end. It's very much to what he is different than what he was like at the beginning. We're reading Luke 8, verse 26 to 39. Remember, they've been out on the sea in the storm, and Jesus has calmed the storm. We read, "And they sailed to the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. And when he had come out onto the land, he was met by a certain man from the city who was possessed with demons, and who had not put on any clothing for a long time, who was not living in the house, but in the tombs. And seeing Jesus, he cried out and fell before him and said in a loud voice, 'What do I have to do with you, Jesus, the Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me. For you have been commanding the unclean spirit to come out of the man, for it had seized him many times, and he was bound with chains and shackles and kept under guard. Yet he would burst his fetters and be driven by the demon into the desert.' And Jesus asked him, 'What is your name?' And he said, 'Legion,' for many demons had entered him. And they were entreating him not to command them to depart into the abyss. Now there was a herd of many swine feeding there on the mountain, and the demons entreated him to permit them to enter the swine. And he gave them permission. And the demons came out from the man and entered the swine. And the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. And when the herdsmen saw what had happened, they ran away and reported it in the city and out in the country. And the people went out to see what had happened, and they came to Jesus and found the man from whom the demons had gone out sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. And they became frightened. And those which seen it reported as to how the man who had been demon-possessed had been made well. And all the people of the country of the Gerasenes and the surrounding district asked him to depart from them, for they were gripped with great fear. And he got in the boat and returned. But the man from whom the demons had gone out was begging him that he might accompany him. But he sent him away, saying, 'Return to your own house and describe what great things God has done for you.' And he went away, proclaiming throughout the whole city what great things Jesus had done for him." There is a sermon outline on the back cover of the bulletin. There's a term that's popular today. You'll see it in the sermon title. It's the word wholeness. And I must admit I was a little reluctant to use that word, because there are a lot of strange ideas that are floating around now about wholeness. There's even what's called a science of wholeness. And if you go to the website and look at it, it's a very strange group. And so I was tempted to stay away from that term. It has all sorts of implications. But if you look at the word itself, the basic meaning is an undivided or unbroken completeness or totality with nothing wanting. And to desire that type of wholeness is actually good. That we should desire, as humans being, to be wanting nothing. To be total and complete. And I think of that in terms of psychology. A whole person is one who is integrated. who's able to function in society, who's able to deal with the challenges of life and not be disturbed by it. And the opposite, and it is even a psychological term, is the idea of disintegration. The person who's so disorganized in terms of personality and behavior that they do have trouble functioning in society. It's sad and alarming when you meet a person like that, that who's so fragmented, so irrational, that they're not able to function properly. And that, as we look at Luke 8, is what we see. There's this man who comes up and meets Jesus. He goes across the lake, who's completely fragmented, who's completely disorganized, who's completely unable to deal with reality. He cannot function in society. But he's changed. And thus our theme is that only Jesus Christ can make a person whole, truly whole, again. And that is our message that we have to proclaim to a world that is needing wholeness. Because our world is lacking that integration that it should have. And though it may not realize it, it's searching for wholeness in the true sense of the word. And so the first point we could see is this man among the tombs was completely disintegrated. He was completely lacking any of the normal behavior patterns that we would expect of human beings. And notice, first of all, his situation, the description of what he's like. In verse 27, he was possessed with demons. He had not put on clothes for a long time. He was living in the tombs rather than living in a house. We can infer from all that is said that he was violent. And as we look at the parallel in Mark 5, we see that he was also constantly screaming. And was also gashing himself with stones, perhaps an attempt to get those demons out of his body. This is a description of a human being who's totally lost it. He's not able to function as a human being. Socially, what's he doing? Well, he's running around naked. He's constantly screaming at people. Undoubtedly scaring them. Mentally, he's doing himself harm. He's cutting himself, wounding himself with rocks. He's living in the great outdoors without any protection. Morally, he's lost it as well. He's inhabited by unclean spirits. He's living among the graves, which would make him ceremonially unclean. And as you think about this man, he is about as far away from what God has designed as possible. Because God has designed us as human beings to reflect His image, to be whole, to glorify Him. But some men and some women show very little of the image of God. And this man certainly showed it extremely little. About as bad as you could be. And of course, as the man comes and approaches Jesus, what he wants is to be made whole, to be restored, to be in right mind and right behavior. And what would the people of the area want? Well, they would want that same thing, because here is someone who is plaguing their community. Someone who would make it unsafe to go down by the sea. You wouldn't want your children to be around. And they tried at times to help them. But there he is, roaming free, screaming and ranting. An insane man in their midst that no one can overcome. Well, the second thing is that human help to save him was futile. the people of tribes, you look at verses 29, they bound him with chains and shackles. The chains would be around his wrist to control his arms and his hands, and the shackles would be around his feet to control his movements. And then they put him under guard on top of that. And we're still told in that verse, they weren't able to keep him under their power. He would break free of their control. And so they were powerless to control this man, to keep him under control, to keep him from roaming, from being a threat. And how often our first instinct is trying to resort to human solutions, whether it be the current economic chaos, or a marriage that is breaking down, or troubled youth, or whatever the situation is, that we look for human solutions. To think by our psychology or our economics that we can take care of the problems. But at best, it's only a band-aid on the situation. It will not produce true wholeness. And that's what we see here. The efforts of men have failed and failed completely in this situation. But we see that Jesus Christ does provide true wholeness. And he does so very simply. He speaks the word and it is done. And just as Jesus had spoken to the raging storm and calmed it early in the chapter, he again speaks. And this time calms the raging storm within the man. Now, as you look at it, verse 30, as Jesus asks the evil spirits, the unclean spirit, his name, they say, Legion. For there are many demons that entered him. And so the foe was formidable. A Roman legion consisted of 6,000 men, as soldiers, and then a couple hundred others, auxiliary helpers. So by calling its name Legion, it's saying this vast army is taking up residence inside this man. From a human point of view, victory would look doubtful. The enemy is so formidable. But they could not resist Jesus. And they know it. They cry out. They know who he is. He's the Son of the Most High. They understand his position, his power. And the best they can do is say, allow us to go into this herd of pigs. You know, can we delay going to the abyss, the place that that Satan and the evil demons, this placement's reserved for them. Let us not go there immediately. Can we just stay out for a time? You know, inhabit these pigs for a time. And Jesus permits them to do that. But their attempt to avoid the abyss is short-lived. Once they enter the herd, the pigs, it seemed, become insane. They act in an insane manner. They rush down into the water and drown. Something that they would not normally do. And Mark 5:13 tells us there were 2,000 pigs in that herd. And why did Jesus allow this great loss of property? Well, at least one of the reasons is so that this man who's been so plagued by all these unclean spirits could see that this terrible ordeal was over. That those unclean spirits were no longer in him. They were in those pigs, and those pigs were no longer around. It would no longer plague him or anyone else in the area. But it also shows us that man's worth is much more than that of animals. That this one man's health and sanity was more important than that of all those animals. And as we look at this incident, we can see several very important lessons for us. First, there's a warning against occult and Satanism and the like. Anything that would distort and disturb the person. And these things are increasing in our society around us. Along with things that go along with it, like drug use and pornography and immorality. And at the heart of it, although it's often being trumpeted as something great, at the heart of it is ugly and destructive, just as it was to this man. Anything that is degrading and animalizing, it's part of Satan's plan. And whether it's an attitude or a habit or an addiction, a sexual practice, a mental preoccupation, these things destroy. These things cause us to disintegrate as human beings rather than reflect the glory of God, rather than making us fully alive to God. And we're to stay away from those things because they are so harmful. Second lesson is that in a spiritual battle, Jesus Christ alone can give the victory. And indeed, he can give victory over the strongest of foes. And whatever your problem, whatever difficulty is, you don't need to fear. Because Christ can make you complete, can make you whole. And you may look back in your life and say, I wish I hadn't done that, I hadn't lived that way. Christ can restore you. And the third, it's a reminder to us that men and women that are made in the image of God are of exceedingly greater value than the animals. Today, one of the tendencies is to equate animals with man, to say they have the same rights, the same privileges as we, that they're equal, and to see man as above animals is a sort of imperialism that's wrong. No, we're to understand that man is much more valuable than the animals. Well, the second point is, beside the man in the tombs, there are others who are suffering disintegration, who are not fully alive, fully integrated the way they should be, and that's the townspeople. Notice that as the report goes out to the city and the environment around, as they hear what has happened, something very remarkable, as they come out to see what's happened and they find this man who is undoubtedly well known in their community. He would have been a constant threat to them. He would have frightened them. He would have frightened their children. They come out and see this man radically changed. Instead of roaming the hills and screaming, they see him sitting at the feet of Jesus. Instead of being naked, he's clothed. Instead of having a demon-induced insanity, he's in his right mind. What a contrast. And they saw it. They were amazed. They were filled with fear. They understood the depth of what had happened. To have seen that man before, in all its savage insanity, and to see him now would have indicated to them that there was a powerful force at work to change them. Their response is really the same as the response of the 12 in the boat.